thank you. And we have, we staff have been working hard on some guidance. I'd like to get some input from the board if they find that acceptable. These are newly listed impaired water bodies. So, Eric Tony Wagner and Carly Nielsen will be presenting this item.
Okay, good afternoon, board chair.
Substituting chair.
They're both not here. I'm Mary Fiore Wagner, and today with Carly Nielsen, we are both environmental scientists in the South Lake Tahoe office in the Basin Planning and TMDL unit. We will be presenting item number 10 in your agenda packet. Although we are presenting this item today, this was a joint effort with all the staff in the TMDL and Basin Planning unit. No action is required by the board. We do appreciate your comments and input, and we would like concurrence with the strategy that we've developed. Oh my gosh. Did I turn it off?
Oh no.
Oops.
Uh-oh.
Oops. Maybe let's try going back. There we go. We'll start from number one. There we go. Hold on. There we go. Oh, no. What you want to do is the arrow that way.
Okay, so purpose. Why are we here today? We're presenting staff's draft guidance to prioritize the Lahontan list of impaired water bodies, which is known as the 303D list. In the past, to prioritize and inform annual work plans, staff gave recommendations and received management direction for determining which listings to address first. And I thought it was interesting, Chair Cox today during Doug's presentation said, it's great to have some structure to the process, so that's what we're hoping with this strategy that we're proposing. So we felt there was a need for a more well-thought-out approach to help us address the universe of our 303D list of water bodies. We acknowledge that we need to operate as efficiently as possible to address over 150 impaired waters with the 4 tech staff we have to do this. Now, as you know from the unit that we're in, it's the TMDL and Basin Planning Unit, so it's 4 staff that we split our time with the Basin Planning Program as well as the TMDL program. We also do grant administration, and we have other responsibilities. So we've developed this strategy, which we believe helps focus our efforts so we first address impairments that pose a threat to human health. And this is in line with our regional priorities. It also helps us inform for work planning. It provides consistent methods to prioritize impairments. It assists in the development of annual work plans, and it ensures that current and future staff utilize the same methodology for prioritization of work plans. Currently, there is no state board or EPA guidance on how to go about prioritizing, and we also consulted other regional boards. They also do not have any written guidance at the regional board level. And we will discuss those approaches shortly. So the roadmap of our presentation will present how other regions prioritize their impaired water bodies. Then we'll briefly discuss the 303D listing process that is applied to identify impaired water bodies. Next, we'll move into how we organized our list of water bodies into bins to then prioritize which impaired water bodies to address first. And finally, we'll discuss next steps. So to learn how other regional boards prioritize their listed water bodies, we conducted an informal survey of other regions. 5 out of the 8 other regions responded. And while no region has written guidance on prioritizing their 303D list, there are themes common to most of the regional boards. Regional staff do not customarily present their prioritization efforts to their regional boards. Instead, staff at all regional boards develop their priorities at the TMDL unit level, and most prioritizations are given final approval by senior management. When developing the regional TMDL work plan, nearly all regions elevate projects if a water body is high profile or if there's significant stakeholder concern. Another reoccurring theme is that regions will prioritize addressing impaired water bodies when staff finds the pollutant to be a controllable source and there's opportunity to address the pollutant source through an action other than a TMDL, or if there's already a water board project scheduled for the same watershed. So you basically would be achieving your pollutant load reductions through requirements in a waste discharge requirement, or through an enforcement order, or through implementation of a restoration project. Another commonality was that most regional board staff will prioritize if the project is considered as a low-hanging fruit that can be effectively addressed within a fiscal year. So as you recall, you adopted the 2012 integrated report list back in June of 2014. Early this year, State Board approved our list, and that was followed by EPA's recent approval just last month. For this exercise, we evaluated the 2012 approved list. It's comprised of 157 water bodies for the Lahontan region. And as you can see from the pie chart, 76 or 119 of these list of water bodies have not been addressed. Now, back to the listing policy. How do the water bodies get on the list? They're evaluated every 6 years through the integrated report process. Staff evaluates all quality assurance approved data, and we update the list of impaired water bodies. We evaluate the data using the State Board's guidance, referred to as the listing policy, which outlines factors that should be considered when adding or removing waters from the list. As far as listing a water body, the policy specifies the number of exceedances for a specific sample size that require a water body to be listed. So the available data is compared to some regulatory limit, whether that be a site-specific objective, US EPA criteria for protection of freshwater fish, or municipal supply like an MCL. And then if that data set contains enough exceedances, then that water body is placed on the list. The next listing cycle for the Lahontan region will take place in 2018. Okay, when evaluating the 157 listings for our board, our region, it was important to bin the different water body pollutant combinations as there were some marked differences. After thoroughly going through the lists, staff created four bins that best capture the different listings to help inform prioritization of impairments. The bins are reflected on this slide with more detail on each in the next few slides. You can refer to Appendix A, beginning on page number 10-15 of your board packet, to see how water bodies are organized into different bins. Bin 1. 24% of our listings, or 38 water body pollutant combinations, are included in this bin. These are water bodies that the impairment is currently being addressed by a US EPA approved TMDL or a regulatory action other than a TMDL. Though this bin includes water bodies that have been addressed, these listings still require staff to perform compliance tracking and potential adaptive management of existing regulation after the adoption of the TMDL. And as you know, the TMDL process, it's not a short process. It includes an analysis of sources, then allocating loads to those sources, and then developing an implementation plan to address those sources. The TMDL process involves peer review, public participation, and it requires multiple levels of approval. So you understand it's an intensive demand on staff resources. Some examples of impairments that would fit into Bin 1 would include Indian Creek Reservoir, where phosphorus was addressed with the USE approved TMDL, and also the Lake Tahoe TMDL. As far as water body impairments that are addressed by actions other than ATMBL. Examples would be Cold Creek, where the nitrogen impairment is being addressed through the U.S. Forest Service Restoration Project, and also Sarah's Lake, salinity, TDS, and total petroleum hydrocarbons are being addressed through cleanup and abatement orders with Molly Corps. Bin 2. There's 22% or 35 of our listings fall into this category, and staff is very confident that a water body is impaired in this. Those are the water body pollutant combinations that fall into this bin, because we have a very robust temporal and spatial data set that demonstrates clearly that the water body is not supporting its designated use. This bin is then further prioritized, which we will discuss later in the presentation. An example that would fit into bin 2 is the Silverwood Lake impairment for mercury and PCBs. Initial data for Silverwood Lake was collected as part of a statewide screening effort in 2007. That data showed very high levels of methyl mercury and PCBs in fish. Because this lake is a high recreation area, there's a lot of anglers, there's a lot of people who consume the fish that they catch. Our swamp program secured funding to perform additional sampling so the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment could create safe eating guidelines. And here we have it. This is that guideline that is actually published on the web. It was developed in 2013, and it's basically a guide to eating fish from Silverwood Lake. What's safe? And it's available in multiple languages. So the source of the mercury at Silverwood Lake will be addressed through a statewide mercury control program for reservoirs, which is currently being developed at the state board level. However, we will need to address the PCBs through a TMDL process, perhaps. Okay, bin 3. This is 44% or 69 of our water body listings fall into this category. Now, though water bodies on the 303D list are considered impaired, staff are really not confident that these water bodies are in fact impaired and they're not supporting beneficial uses, because we feel like we need to further investigate before we're going to invest significant staff resources and time to develop a plan to address the impairment that we're not sure even exists. So water body pollutant combinations that fall into this bin include listings that were made prior to 2006. For these listings, there was no administrative record, and the data that provided the basis for the listing is not available, or it's very limited. And in all cases, the listing was so long ago that there are actually no regional board staff available to provide any further insight. They've retired. Staff is leery to commit resources to addressing these impairments before we can actually confirm that it is an impairment. We also have water bodies that were listed because their water quality data met the listing policy's requirement for listing. According to the listing policy, two of two exceedances are necessary to list for toxicants, being metals, pesticides, and five of five exceedances are required to list for conventional pollutants like pH and temperature. In many cases, our basin plan, the water quality objective, is based on an annual average or a mean of monthly means. So, as an example, if you have three or four samples that are collected per year, and that average exceeds the water quality objective for 2 years, it would be listed for toxicants. The problem is when the data, it's often not temporally representative of seasonal or annual fluctuations in flows and pollutant concentrations that we see throughout our region. For instance, during runoff events, we often sample during runoff events. So if you're not catching the other low flow times, you could be biased high in your water quality objective. In other cases, the data may not be spatially representative because of access issues. If it's on if a part of the segment is on private, we may have access issues, and that would preclude a good longitudinal picture of that water segment. So in these cases, staff would prefer to have more representative data of ambient conditions to have confidence in determining if there is an impairment. And in many cases, through the integrated report process, we have not recommended that these water bodies be listed, but the State Board and EPA, through their approval process, added them in and against the justification that we provided. So an example here would be the Susan River listing for mercury. In 2006, Susan River, the entire reach, was evaluated. And it based on 4 fish fillet composite samples from 2 sample stations. Then, subsequently, after the 2006 listing, the Susan River was divided into 3 segments. But that listing of mercury impairment was assigned to each of the 3 segments. And in 2012 and 2013, the Forest Service collected over 100 fish in the upper watershed segment, and they found no methylmercury impairment in the fish. So to further investigate this, our staff has now initiated a TMDL discretionary contract to evaluate the lower 2 segments, and this is will be complete in 2016, and we will determine if there is a fish impairment mercury or not, if any. Then also in this category, in some cases the water quality objective may not be an appropriate measure to determine compliance with the beneficial use. In these situations, staff wants to first further investigate, and if they find out it isn't an appropriate metric to be using to evaluate the beneficial use, it would then move this water body pollutant combination into bin 4, which Carly is going to speak about now.
Okay, so this is the last bin. I need to change it. Which is bin 4. And this is the one where there's no action by staff in terms of addressing the impairment. And there's actually 2 reasons why. So the first, the Lahontan region has a very varied geological nature, including mineral deposits, geothermal springs, and other factors that influence the composition of the region's waters. These factors can result in water quality violations where the discharge is not from a discrete and or non-point source, but is instead natural. So currently, the listing policy does not include a natural conditions provision to provide for relief for any of these listings. Staff has encountered this issue through the integrated report process, and these water body plume combinations are often listed, regardless of staff recommendations not to list due to natural sources. This policy to have an exemption for natural sources must actually come from the State Board or the federal side, and relates to the categorizational process that's actually part of the listing policy. So staff at this point has begun communications with State Board and is hoping to get some more progress towards this issue, and we'll hope to update you guys in an EO report in the fall on where this is going and how we hope to resolve it. So an example of a natural sources impairment that was listed is Honey Lake for arsenic. The lake has naturally high salinity and is affected by geothermal discharges, and it also oftentimes has low flows, which exacerbates the arsenic levels in that water body. And then the second reason is that site-specific objectives were based on natural background water quality to protect existing high background water quality protect existing high-quality water, not necessarily to protect a beneficial use in our basin plan. So this topic we're actually hoping to address again in the triennial review process 2015, so hopefully we'll come back to you with more in November. So a good example of this is the water quality objective not being appropriate would be Hidden Valley Creek for phosphorus. So this creek is actually used as a reference site as part of the Heavenly Valley creek permit by the Heavenly Ski Resort. And they use it as sort of a reference site for seeing if they're meeting their TMDL targets for their sediment TMDL. And this listing cycle was actually listed for phosphorus based on our stringent phosphorus objective. So, and this water body is actually located in an undisturbed watershed with no anthropogenic sources. So, once again, as Mary highlighted with the TMDL process, developing water quality objectives is also very challenging, and it's an administrative process that can take months to years. This work typically involves data collection and analysis, environmental and economic consideration, and allows for a formal public review and comment period. So now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the schematic so you guys can see it all together. So as Mary talked about the first three bins, and I just talked about the last bin, this is kind of the overview of the different bins we discussed and the different actions that need to happen. So some of these, I do want to highlight that some of these water bodies can move from bin to bin, especially bin three. It's the most dynamic. And so this listings in this bin can either move to bin two or move to bin four, or it can actually be delisted upon further investigation by staff. So let's get to the point. We're going to be talking specifically about bin two, the confirmed impairments, and how we hope to prioritize those in high, medium, and low. So here we go. So the prioritization effort focuses only on bin two. So although we recognize that the impairments in bin 2 are confirmed and must be addressed, as Mary said earlier, we do have limited staff resources, and so we actually needed to further prioritize so we can have it reflected in our annual work plans. So this is what staff is currently proposing for consideration, but multiple other criteria were considered, and I'm going to discuss that actually in the next slide. So staff chose to keep this criteria simple and overarching to allow for the prioritization to be easily applied to all the different confirmed impairments we have. So, because we found with more criteria we had, listings can fit into multiple different priority levels, and it further complicated the process. So, for the high priority impairments are those that have direct impacts to human health. And some of these examples could include mercury where folks are eating the fish, or bacteria where there's high levels of recreation and swimming. The highest priority will also be given to impacts that directly affect disadvantaged communities. So as Mary discussed earlier, a good example of a high priority impairment would be Silverwood Lake for mercury and PCBs. So medium priority impairments are those that impact multiple beneficial uses and are located in a non-urban area with known recreation. So a medium priority example may be the East Fork Carson River, the headwaters to Woodford segment for chloride. In the past couple years, we received a lot of historical data from the South Tahoe Public Utility District, which has given us a very robust data set. And it also supports multiple different beneficial uses and is most recently been listed for quite a few different impairments. So we could actually address a lot of these listings under potentially a single action or a single TMDL. So a low priority is an impairment that is in a non-urban area with little to no recreation and supports very few beneficial uses. The water body is also isolated or ephemeral with limited flows. So an example of a low priority could be Bodie Creek for mercury. This water body is often dry in the summer months when the state park is open and the public is allowed, and there is no known recreation, and the water flows very, very rarely there, or at least surface flows. So as I mentioned earlier, the other criteria we consider, most of these criteria supplement the high, medium, and low criteria we're proposing for the prioritization. Some examples include economic impacts, the type of beneficial use affected, whether it's cold water habitat, type of recreation, commercial use, etc. And we're still going to use this criteria to further refine the priority within our high, medium, and low impairment levels. So we're not going to forget about it. So as to next steps. So staff developed this draft staff report for the prioritization of the Lahontan Region 303D list, the guidelines for prioritizing listed water bodies, and that's located in your board packet in Bates number 10-7. And as Mary said as well, this includes Appendix A with tables that exhibits how the staff binned and prioritized the 2012 303D list. And there is a staff comments column that I do want to mention that should give a little bit more information as to the data or the staff justification of why it fit into a certain bin or a priority level. So staff has already begun looking at listed water bodies that were in bin 3, and if you remember, that was the ones where staff wanted to verify. And we began sampling the Susan River, Mammoth Creek, the East Walker River, East Fort Carson River, and Rock Creek in November of 2014. So for these water bodies, there was very few samples that actually got them on the 303D list. And in most cases, it was based on an annual average with, you know, maybe a few samples per year to characterize that annual average. And so we're going back and trying to get very comprehensive once-a-month sampling regimens so we could get a full year's look at it. And then because we're already there, we're also looking at total dissolved solids at these areas to see if our total dissolved solids objective should be applied for these beneficial uses and if they characterize the ambient conditions. So having completed this exercise, future TMDL and basin planning work plans will incorporate this prioritization structure. So for the TMDL unit, staff can prioritize high priority impairments and develop and implement regulatory actions in TMDLs and have future work plans reflect that. And for the basin planning unit, this exercise could inform changes to water quality objectives in the basin plan to have a more appropriate measure for protection of beneficial uses. And finally, through the vetting process of prioritizing listings, staff will be better informed to develop TMDL discretionary contract funds ideas and potential grant proposals. So as an example, the Water Board recently received additional funding to continue with the microbial source tracking. And then as Mary stated earlier, we also secured contract funds to take a better look at the Susan River for methylmercury in fish. So as we discussed through this presentation, we put our 157 listings into one of four bins. Some are being addressed, some fit into bin 2, which are further prioritized based on direct impacts to human health and beneficial uses. Some need additional verification by staff, and others require no current action by staff because there is no impairment to a beneficial use, or the cause is by natural sources that cannot be controlled. So this prioritization structure is then reflected in our draft guidance document, and we hope to apply it to all future listing cycles and additional listings. So given all this information, do you guys have any questions, and do you guys agree with this approach in prioritizing our impairments?
Thank you very much. So you're looking for direction from the board on this question. I'm going to look over this direction to my left. Do you have any questions or comments?
I do not, except that I do concur with the guidance, and that was a very, very fine presentation.
I do agree also. It's an excellent presentation, good guidance, I think it works. Do you have any sampling data on the East Fork of the Carson that was done back in the early 1980s by California Silver Mining Company?
We do not. We do have data, I think, that dates back to the early, maybe starting 1983 from the South Tahoe Public Utility District. So all of our data is specifically from them.
Mr. Sandel?
No, we do not.
I might be able to, if you're interested.
Yeah, speak up, everybody. No, it's okay. Everyone needs to hear.
I agree with the rest of the board that this approach is very workable. I couldn't quite sort out how you get a number like 4B or 5B or whatever category. How does that work?
So we were actually purposely not going into that because it's not. It's part. No, it's fine, but it's actually part of the State Board 2004 listing policy.
Oh, okay.
So everything fits into a specific category of whether it's addressed by a TMDL. It needs, you know, all the beneficial uses are.
I don't really need to know.
Yeah, no, it's not anything that most people want to know.
Thank you.
So, first of all, I'd like to say that for years I've been looking at the TMDL reports of all the different regions, and they had, you know, Region 4 had a list like this, and Region 3 had a list like this, and we had one, Tahoe TMDL. So, well, we had actually a couple more than that, but, you know, it was always like, Region 6. So this process is a pat on the back and a sign that we have gotten the Tahoe TMDL off our plate and into implementation, and so now we can move on, and that's very exciting, to looking at the rest of the region. So I can tell a lot of thought has been put into developing this process, and I don't have any, it looks fine to me, go forward. I have a question, and I was just curious. Sometimes I think, if I sort the data a different way, I'm going to see some interesting patterns, and I go through the exercise, and then there are no interesting patterns. So this might be one of those. But I was just curious, if you sorted things by the kind of water body. So, grossly speaking, whether it's in North Lahontan or South Lahontan, I mean, for example, if it's a more arid area, desert area versus mountainous area, and or this kind of issue that was involved, methylmercury, phosphorus, arsenic, I don't know. And then you looked at where, according to that sorting, which bin they fell into. If that would tell us something, like certain things are easier to deal with, so they fall into bin one or bin two, and certain things we're missing a tool or, something where maybe it should be moving up in the priority list, but there's some sort of systematic lack where reason why we haven't been able to get at that kind of problem, and maybe that's something we need to focus a little more on. I don't know if anyone has any.
Well, right now I'd say pretty much all of what you just discussed are the ones that would fall into bin 3, where it needs further staff verification. And that would be something where we need to start looking at some of these other options. And as we start, it's kind of like the onion. As you pull a layer off, you start to come up with another issue. And so we've kind of, this is where we even got to this prioritization structure, is going through the integrated report process and seeing all of the nuances and issues that we had confronted with. So,
Well, it's interesting, and hopefully I'm addressing or going in the direction you were going in, but as Carly mentioned, the water bodies that we've been going out monthly to try to get that more seasonal and annual picture, so we capture the fluctuations in flow and the pollutant load. What we have been seeing for TDS is that what was developed years ago is far lower. It's very ultra-low levels of TDS. The 8 months that we have of data, those levels are almost double. Now, what I was hearing with what you were saying that's interesting is this climate change. With TDS, I mean, this year was a drought situation. Your TDS is going to, over time, go up as climate change proceeds. How do we address that with our water quality objectives, which are ultra low to protect our high quality waters, not necessarily an objective that's protective of cold freshwater habitat or mute, you know?
Rich Booth, Unit Supervisor, TMDL Basin Planning Unit. That great question, Amy, I asked Judith Unsinger when she was here running integrated report. And when we sorted the listed water bodies at the time, the 2010 list, by pollutant, looking for an interesting pattern, the closest thing we came was that there were some more inorganic pollutants in the south than there were in the north, as you would expect given the geology. That it wasn't glaring, it wasn't overpowering, and it didn't really help us in any kind of a prioritization scheme. What Mary and Carly have done, also with Dan Sussman's help, is a far greater method, because the interesting patterns that you saw, as you suspect, we really don't see.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you. Any other board questions or comments? Thank you very much.